All right, Body Works, woohoo! But what is Body Works? Body Works is a healthy lifestyle program created by the Office on Women's Health, and it's designed to use the stages of behavior change to help families improve their eating and activity habits. Sounds good. We know that, I have to switch that. We know that parents play a vital role in shaping their children's lives, and with that as our starting point and all those things, we developed Body Works. The Body Works has three main messages. The first is that healthy adolescents become strong adults. The second is parents are an important influence on their children's eating and activity habits. And the third is that change takes time. You have to start with a few small steps and then work your way into it. The Body Works program incorporates all of that into a curriculum for the trainers and a toolkit for the participants. And the items in the toolkit are all portrayed beautifully there. And you can see that there are various things for both the parents and the caregivers and different things for the adolescents, both for girls and for guys. And then for the whole family, it comes wrapped up in a nice reusable grocery bag. So currently, we have, it's led by trained facilitators, and it consists of 8 90-minute family-focused sessions. It's based on, as I said, the stages of change modeled by Prochaska. The program was originally developed just for girls and their mothers, but it has been expanded to include the entire family. We have over 4,000 trainers across all 50 states and the U.S. territories, and this includes about 400 trainers for the Spanish language program, and then of the over 3,900 families that have gone through the program, about 400 of those have done the Spanish program, which was launched a couple of years after the original program, which launched in 2006. Let's do that. So how did we get here? Body Works was developed after several years of formative research. This research included a literature review, a steering committee of researchers, healthcare providers, and government officials, several focus groups with girls, middle school nurses, parents of girls, and telephone interviews with healthcare providers. At first, the adolescents were only asked to come to two of the sessions of the 8, but based on feedback from the trainers and results of our pilot evaluation, the girls and boys are now asked to come to all of the sessions with their parents and caregivers or other family members as appropriate. I have to keep doing that. We did a pilot evaluation. It's very fabulous. It was conducted from 2006 to 2008. There were 6 sites chosen for the evaluation. They ranged from a rural county health department to a private pediatrics office. It included 2 key components, a national survey of trainers and an in-depth study of participants. And the in-depth study of participants featured surveys of the parents and caregivers and interviews with the evaluation site administrators and trainers. The survey respondents included 166 trainers, 94 intervention parents and caregivers, 35 control group parents, and 57 daughters. No partridge in a pear tree. The major findings were that there were gains in the parents' knowledge about nutrition and physical activity. There is greater self-efficacy in pursuing a healthy lifestyle. And there was self-reported behavior change. Moving forward, we are conducting an evaluation of the revised program. It was originally 10 sessions. It is now 8 sessions across the United States. The study is designed to test whether the participants have improved their knowledge, attitudes, self-efficacy, and behaviors. It's bigger, it's better. The study will include a pre-test and post-test and a 2-month follow-up with the parents and their children who participated, as well as a comparison group. And we plan to start the evaluation in early 2012. And we're also updating the toolkits and waiting excited to see the results of the new evaluation and looking for ways to become more sustainable at the community level. Now, that, I believe, was the fastest presentation ever. If you have more questions, I'm sure you probably have some. For more information, look here, ask me, and that's me.
Well, I think the Health Communication Working Group outdid themselves, finding absolutely fantastic presenters for this session. Would you guys all agree? Well, we can take questions.
Great question. Thank you for that. For this current study, you're absolutely right. That was kind of beyond the scope of what we were intending to do with this data. But I think it definitely is interesting to find out what type of information parents do know about their kids. So what I can say about the existing literature is that what we see is, what I think is important is that whole skill piece. So even for parents who do think it's important, there is still a subset of them who feel reticent, who feel like they lack the skills, and so that is a barrier and a challenge to actually having those conversations. But I think you raised good points about kind of future research, thinking about what is it that their parents actually know about what their kids are doing, it kind of turning it on its head and looking from a different perspective from the parents. So it's beyond kind of what you've been doing with this research.
Hi, thank you all for your presentation. I had a question for you. Either in your research or existing research out there about sexual orientation and gender identity issues, did that come up at all in the questionnaire?
We did ask questions about if you are sexually active, who you are having sex with, and a huge preponderance of the sample actually were heterosexual or having sex with opposite gender. But a lot of my research beyond this study does start to look at gender identity and sexual orientation. So I do think that's important, but for the sample that we used, it was a predominantly heterosexual population.
We had a question all the way in the back. No?
I was interested in the idea of after dinner kind of TV watching, and whether you suggested at all, or what you would think about a suggestion of an alternative activity, so just playing games with your kids.
You know, it's really interesting. I think I've been thinking a lot about this because I, you know, based on my other research, and I don't know how parents are going to respond to being told. You know, that hour might be the hour that's their sanity hour. We don't really know how it's being used to determine. So that's what I think needs to be done next, is actually to understand why parents would be resistant to it, to understand whether it would be something where we offer an alternative activity, where we say, you know, maybe two nights a week, make that night be your family games or something else, or whether we have to say, instead of an hour, can you make it 30 minutes? We need to get a better sense of why, what that hour, that time is being used for, and whether it's something that is, you know what, oh, I could replace that. This is the time I'm home and I'm always doing something. We just happen to be watching TV together. Or is it a time where mom's doing something else, like getting the kids' lunches ready for the next day, and this is the time it's just, okay, they're taking care of. So we need to understand more what's happening then to figure out whether substitution with other activities is best, or whether it's trying to give them some reduction strategies and say, can you just decrease it? It's unclear, but I know it's not something that would be received positively by, I mean, if you think about that, it's not something that would be very popular. So we need to understand what would be the best way. That's why I think this part gives us an idea of look at nighttime TV more, but I don't think it's something where we can jump in and just say, time to reduce it. We need to understand what that would be. So absolutely a good point.
Other questions?
Sorry about my voice. Anything about the role of dad, too?
Yeah, I refer to mom just when I'm talking, but this sample was primarily moms. We normally see in some of the focus group work, it's usually dads will say, whatever my wife or whatever mom, if they're a married couple, we'll see that that's normally what happens. When it's a single parent household, we actually see that whether it's led by mother or father, there's more viewing generally in single parent households. So that's even a separate issue, but when it is a married unit, typically dad will tell us whatever mom says is what we'll do.
I will admit, I came here half because I'm really interested in the topics and half because I'm a parent and I was looking for something. So, about the TV thing, it would be really interesting to me to know if there are differences in patterns of watching based on whether there is a parent who stays in the home or whether both parents work. Because I wonder if the change in viewing habits is related to more technology being available. The fact that there's never a time of day when there's bad TV on now, whereas
24 hours
you always have chunks of time where it was news and it was soap operas and kids didn't want to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, it's interesting. I have data on another project I worked on. I have a 24-hour time diary capturing and actually represents a sample of how kids are spending their entire day with and without media and the content of what that media is. So it's really funny you say that because actually, right now, one of my analysis is looking at whether or not amount of time spent in content is dependent upon who's there and when. So far, interestingly, we're saying that if it's someone's a stay-at-home parent, the kids are actually being exposed to more background television, not necessarily foreground. So it's mom might be or dad, whoever's home, might be watching something for themselves, and the kids are in the room doing another activity. But I haven't yet seen differences in foreground, but I'm just getting into that. So. But I understood the train of thought. You're upset. I'm right there right now with this other data set I'm working on.
I actually have a question for you, Anne. How are you marketing Body Works?
There's a lot of word of mouth marketing. They make me go to presentations at conferences. in the exhibit hall, we talk about it. We do partnership outreach. We have a great team that works on it.
Do you know Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts both have programs that they would love to do something like that and put it into their programs?
So I did not know that. And
at Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts both get badges for doing that type of stuff.
Great, thank you.
That was going to be my question, was whether there, I know this is through the office of the HHS Office of Health, but is there any crossover where this could be a program that mothers could do with their sons or their fathers could do with their sons as well?
Yeah. We did. We expanded all the materials to include guys as well, and like all of the curriculum materials are work for both girls and guys or a mixed group.
The other thing I was going to say, I know that there are a lot of school systems around the country that don't have a lot of good health education curriculum material, mm-hmm. And I learned this just from the material I created a few years ago, and people would find it and say, "Oh wow, we don't have anything like this." And I wonder if there's an opportunity to reach out to some of the less well-funded school systems. I mean, like around here, most of the school systems have very well-developed health curricula, but there are a lot of smaller school systems around the country that don't, and they might really appreciate having materials like that when they have ready-made programs.
We have done some outreach with school systems and had some good results.
Yeah.
Lots of interest.
Well, we're running a little bit early, but there are no more questions. Do you have any? Okay. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.